I have an extremely unique situation in my growing up years in the relationship with my mother and a subsequent relationship with a stepmother. I'm bringing this out is not only because what Ion tells me about this mysterious situation that I could never solve, but also because of the power of using the RNA drops in a way that we haven't really focused on so far on the show. We haven't necessarily talked about the RNA drops in terms of the inner kingdom or the emotional conflicts and resolving historical situations in people's lives, or an experience that you had that was rather dramatic that you don't prefer to have again. And one of the things that Total Biology says is that every cell organism desires its own completion. So I want to talk about that for a minute as a setup to playing this clip where Ion actually goes through and tells me what I experienced. The circumstances were that when I was 6 years old, my mother and my father got divorced. That can be a common situation for a lot of people, and that in and of itself is very traumatic. Then on top of that, the circumstances of the divorce between my mother and my father were rather unique because my father was very affluent. He had a lot of clout and influence in the place that we were living and that he was working. And he was suspicious of my mother and her choice to divorce him. So he used his influence to actually keep her or prevent her from being able to have custody of us. That was myself and my brother. We were 6 years old at the time. And so my father in the state of California in 1967 was awarded sole custody of us, which is pretty unique even to this day. My mother didn't really groove on that too much, and so she decided to kind of clean out my dad's financial reserve, and she took my brother and I from my dad for a year. And we were on the road, so to speak. I mean, essentially, she kidnapped us, and we were gone for a year. We traveled through the United States, and we had a lot of different episodes and conflicts and dramas, and there was a lot of uncertainty and a lot of confusion. And as you can imagine, the small child and even my smaller younger brother being kind of dragged into this huge situation and episode, of which to this day, I can't remember a lot of it. I never really could remember a lot of it, but I know that there were pinpointed areas that were very dramatic for me. So at the end of the time that we went through this huge swirling experience, she had a day where she decided that she was kind of done with it, and she called my father's mother, who lived in California, and said, "I'm done with the kids, and I want you to come get them. And I'm going to leave them in an airport in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I want you to come pick them up." So she left us in an airport in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My grandmother came and got us, and we never heard or saw from her again. Initially, when she made this decision and then my grandparents came and got us, it was obviously still more chaotic and confusing, and there was a lot of speculation that maybe she would try to come back and get us again. So we had to have all kinds of security things going on. And we never made it to school in the proper time. And my father couldn't come get us immediately because there were all kinds of complications and this and that. But ultimately, after about a year or so, things kind of settled down. She never did show back up again, and nobody ever heard from her. And my father was able to become attracted to and subsequently date and marry a woman in a very short period of time. They met and married within like 5 weeks. And he met another woman who was a delightful woman who ultimately ended up becoming my stepmother. She was my stepmother for about 10 years, and she was great. She was my best friend. She was much younger than my father, so she was just a little bit older than I was, and she was just fantastic. She was beautiful, bright, funny, charming, engaging, dynamic woman, and I just loved her. I just thought the sun hung and set around her. Because of the impact of her in my life, I didn't really give a lot more of attention to the situation with everything that had happened with my birth mother. It was kind of like, well, it was weird, and you couldn't even explain what had happened, but it was kind of like it had all passed. and all kind of just, you know, went away, even though, again, from a biological event standpoint, the repercussions of it were still in my beingness. But my stepmom kind of compensated for it. About 10 years or so into their marriage, my father decided he had built his affluence again. And he decided that he was going to go into business for himself. And he cleaned out the savings and threw down on starting his own business. And my stepmother freaked out. She could not understand why he would do such an irresponsible thing. And they divorced. Well, when they divorced, I thought to myself, well, surely, you know, this is unfortunate or whatever, but it was not going to impact my relationship with her because we were like total best friends and she was my mom and she loved me. And she had even taken the legal steps to adopt me and to, you know, secure me in this idea that I had this mother. So the night that I graduated from high school, she came over to our house and said that she was going to be moving. She was going to go back east where her parents were from, but she had to pay attention to their ailing health and their age, and she was going to make her home back with them. And I was shocked, and I was said, well, let me go with you. You know, this is a long trip, and I can go, and I just graduated from high school, and I had the whole summer to myself before I was going to start my next venture, whatever that was going to be, hopefully college, whatever. And no, I couldn't go. The car was already loaded. And she was already taking off. The next day, I was so devastated by this, I ran over to her house to try to stop her from going. Her car wasn't there, but her apartment was still there. And I looked in and nothing was packed and she wasn't ready to go anywhere. And I was like, why is she doing this? Why is she lying to me? What is going on here? And I started to press my father about it. And he just was like, let it go, but I couldn't let it go because I loved her and she was my mom. And I already lost one mother. I wasn't going to lose another one. Well, about 2 days later, she was gone. And I never heard from her again either. My mother's parents did live back east and we had met them several times. So after she was gone for a couple weeks and I didn't hear, so I thought surely she would call me or tell me where she was or give me a forwarding address, but nothing. She had had her car insurance transferred to a state that she was not supposed to be living in. And there were all these weird things that were coming up. So I decided to call my quote-unquote grandfather, who was my stepmother's father, and say, hey, where's my mom? So I called, and this man answered the phone who, I mean, absolutely came undone with my phone call. And said, I don't know why you're calling. She's not your mother. You're not my grandchildren. I don't ever want to talk to you again. Leave us alone. And just totally, completely freaked out and hung up on me. It was just so unreal to me. The thing of losing one mother was bad enough, but losing two, I couldn't wrap my brain around it. Kept pressing my father. My father just kept ignoring it and letting it go. I had no way of contacting her. This was in the late 70s, early 80s. I was just kind of forced to resolve myself to move on with my life, even though I had this huge anomaly that I couldn't understand. And it influenced a lot of things in my life. Obviously, the decision not to have children was a big one. I just didn't trust myself to think that I wasn't going to do what my mother did. So I just decided I'm not having kids. Again, this thing about total biology or your DNA, or as Bruce Lipton would call it, the environment in which your cells grow. Right. To have this kind of profound separation, abandonment, anxiety, fear of the unknown, you know, this whole combination, this huge stew. Anyway, the situation that precipitated me getting involved with organized, you know, in Christianity was losing my father and not having the parent or any kind of a grounding force. My dad was so instrumental, of course, in my life, and not having any kind of parent or anything, you know, for me, the next thing to do was just go search out the big guy in the sky and see, by the way, if he had any answers about what was going on with my freaky mother and my subsequent stepmother who, you know, I just didn't get it. It was so bizarre. In the process of doing that, I went to go visit some friends who had a strong Christian background, and I was staying with them in their home in Nebraska, starting to explore this idea of the Bible and God and what would it all mean, and is there a God or somebody who can be bigger than I am when I don't feel strong enough to deal with whatever's in the world? Because otherwise, right. I was just like a little orphan popping around in the world. And even though I was very mature in my adult expression because I had had a lot of success and personal accomplishment, emotionally, inside of myself, there was still a part of me that felt very much like a little girl that was not quite grown up yet. So the night that I was visiting these people in Nebraska, there was a story on the television about this woman named Susan Smith. And she had taken her two small children and she had strapped them into the back seat of her car and she had run them into a lake and drowned them. Do you remember that story, James?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And all I could think about was spending a year on the road with my birth mother and knowing that we had spent so much time in a car and traveling and that she had to get rid of us somehow. At least she had the sense not to kill us and she stuck us in an airport. In my mind at that time, I considered that to be grace. I considered that to be an act of God or some kind of a sign from God that there was something about my life or who I was that was worth saving or redeeming. And that's how I became so passionate in my pursuit of trying to get this aspect of myself resolved. Somehow there was some kind of what I felt to be a divine intervention, but I couldn't quite get it to complete itself. So I got the message. It's like, okay, there's some kind of something going on here, but I still couldn't get clear what it was. And I spent years in Christianity and in all kinds of alternative forms, including regressive hypnotherapy and all kinds of things, trying to access the lockbox or the chamber or whatever that would open up and spill out the magic and answer about what happened to both of my mothers. And I even had friends who were in Homeland Security who tried to do background checking and stuff, and they could never find either one of these women. So in comes Ion. When I first heard Ion, the compelling thing to me was, I wonder if Ion knows what's going on with my mother. And I, like many people, when I initially heard Ion, not having the benefit now of knowing what I know in terms of the things that Bob has helped develop and Ion has developed, that Ion is an environment, not a medium, and, you know, and certainly an event, but not an individual. But initially hearing Ion, I thought probably what a lot of people thought was, ooh, this is like a really super hyper cool plugged in psychic kind of guy. I think I'll ask Ion. So in my first session, when I did try to ask Ion about my mom, I didn't get anywhere, which was part of my whole upset. It was like I spent all these years talking to God, seeking God, praying God, asking God, God, please, God, somebody fucking tell me what's going on here. That was like a resounding, empty, hollow, woo, woo, woo kind of echo thing. Right. And then here I get on the phone with this Ion character who seems to be able to tell you how Michael Jackson faked his own death and ended up in a parallel world with all the loot, but can't quite get me to where I wanted to go in terms of understanding this thing about my mom. But the power of engaging Ion was so strong, I couldn't let it go. In the between time of my first session and my second session, I had gotten a private message from a guy named Greg, who had heard me on Cashflow, and asked me if I was the girl who had called in and talked about my God experience, and I said yes. And so we started emailing each other and then talking on the phone. I had kind of started to hint around to this Greg guy that I had this unresolved issue in my life. And what I was thinking about doing was I was going to rent a trailer kind of a thing and actually go to the point in California where we departed from and see if maybe somehow I could wake up like a series of psychic readings with this Ion character to retrace our steps and see if I could figure out what happened or try to toggle some memories or, you know, dig into this thing. Greg was like, well, I don't know, that kind of sounds interesting, but maybe not. But what you want to do is you want to get on the phone with Ion and you just want to press in and keep asking until you get your answer. Don't let go. Don't give up. The Greg experience with the Evergreens knew it didn't quite have to go down like that. And he had enough experience with Ion. So he's like, just, you know, get on there and demand your answer, so to speak. So this next clip that I am going to play is actually that phone call, that session with Ion, who begins to unfold the circumstances around my life with my mother.
Ion, I want to ask you about my mother. Did she make a transition? Is she in the Gulf?
Ask a little more, because there's okay. A gray part.
Did my natural mother that gave me birth die or make her transition in what I know to be this lifetime or whatever? The woman who gave me birth. Did she die?
It's a little strange situation. It's a little hard. And that's why you're asking.
I'm ready to hear what is really happening, so.
Well, then we're going to ask you your point of reference of your wondering, because
yes.
We can blow you away, and that never serves you. Now, you're ready to know, but when we start slowing down, that means there's little tidbits that you're not ready for. So here's how we're going to play it. You ask. Or go through what's making you wonder or why you would have this query to ask. Then we're going to give it to you as you're asking, so then it becomes something layered that you have a way to embrace. Because of the dogma that you have embraced so far, you don't take it just, oh, well. You don't, oh, well. It's got to be tried and true, and you've got to eat it, sleep it, drink it, sleep with it. Or it was not good at all. Because you have a very firm, linear, progressive, fundamental spirituality that has to be embraceable. So we can't just tell you, because it might be too much sugar for a dime. Well, if it's too much sugar for a dime, rather than get the correct amount of sugar, you won't take any sugar at all. Because it's too much for a dime. So therefore, talk about it a little bit and ask why you want to know, and develop it, and then we'll give it layer by layer for you so you can digest it and go, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, rather than just blowing your doors off to see how strong your hinges are.
Okay. Well, I want to know is because it's a total anomaly, and the more I think about it, the more I think there's something really pretty significant here. That will help me in my own life, in the undoing of the labyrinth of my mind, for one thing, and also in my own grief, unworthiness, stuckness, or whatever. Okay,
now we're getting somewhere, see, because this is the block that we couldn't just tell you the answer, because you have to get to this place if you're asking. All right, now let's start with the first anomaly that you're calling an anomaly. Because when you get this, it won't be an anomaly anymore. So that's why it's significant. We didn't want to waste it just on, like you say, blowing your doors off to see how strong the hinges are. So the first anomaly that you noticed would be?
She disappeared.
Right.
The second anomaly that I noticed is that my adopted stepmother disappeared.
Right.
Third anomaly that I noticed about my natural mother is that all the stories that I was told, I can't find any evidence for, about who she was when she was existing here, supposedly.
Okay. Now, Bob, you say everyone has these things. No, no one's had this yet. This is the first. And that's why when you finished your first engagement with us, JW, of course, being very empathetic, felt all that you were feeling, and it was almost like, oh my goodness, you know, we told JW and Bob straight out, don't worry, she's just got to digest, it's going to be fine, you will be amazed. It was a concern for JW because he felt what you were feeling. Okay, here's the trick. See, in your first natural mother in this place of this world, she was an immortal. Now, this point of immortal is different. You're immortal, but this is different. This is a different type of immortal. And she left. And see, immortals don't do a lot of world jumping, but at the same time, they can't hang around in the same neighborhood. You know why? Because their high school buddies will be 104 and they'll still be 25. Okay? So there's a difference. And now, you are an eternal being, Virginia, and you get that. But immortal is a difference. It's different. It's different. And it's not so common. Now, give us some definitions of immortal.
Number one, not subject to death.
Okay. Now, that does nowhere does that say an eternal being. It says not subject to death.
Right.
That means they can't even choose to die. And now, is that the only definition you got?
Next one is never to be forgotten.
That's exactly right. And that's what Virginia's tears of joy have been about for right here, right now. All right. The tears of joy come from she's never forgotten her natural mother. Never. And felt bad sometimes. She almost wanted to, but something couldn't allow it. All right, so now your second definition. Read it again, Bob.
It says never to be forgotten, and then another word, semicolon, everlasting.
Everlasting, and then applying the first definition, not subject to death. That's different.
Saint Germain can lay down his meat sack.
Yeah.
Virginia's mother can't. So is Virginia's mother, she's everlasting?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. In the physical, in this world. See, immortal doesn't mean you can do a whole lot of world jumping. Now, if they get hooked up just right, it is possible. There are a few examples. There are a few examples, but you're limited, Bob, because you don't have the opportunity to choose to separate from your meat sack. So that bounding or bonding or bound position limits you to a world, not multi-worlds.
This is in biology, fourth meaning, capable of indefinite growth or division.
That's correct. That's from a cellular level. It's a constant strata that's stable. But now, this isn't something you want to do. This isn't what you want. We've never known an immortal that was tickled about it. It's limited. It's limited. Because you can never have a lifelong relationship, because that lifelong relationship, just as in your world, dear, your mom had to leave or disappear, or and then the stories can't be substantiated, and, you know, then they look it up, look it up, and look it up, and it's kind of like, well, now, wait a minute, how does this work? And now, here's the big anomaly. Typically, immortals can't bear children.
Okay, so that's the first part. I had never encountered this kind of material before, and certainly not as an explanation for what my natural mother, who she would have been. We went on after that to kind of explore the second aspect of it, which was what had happened to my stepmom. So I'm going to play that part next. Okay, here we go.
We're going to come back to your mom, so don't worry. We're not leaving it, but there's a bit of synchronized swimming going on here.
Oh, was that her?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
Will you explain that, what just happened there?
What happened was my mother actually shifted and came back to be my stepmother. And I realized what Ion had said when he said there was synchronized swimming going on. All of a sudden, it just hit me like a ton of bricks that was actually my mother, because my relationship with her was so close. I was so connected to her.
And nobody said anything to you?
Well, as Ion goes on to talk about, she couldn't say anything, and my dad wasn't aware of it until close to the time that he actually transitioned. So what? My mother came back about a year after she left us. She came back and arranged the circumstances where she, quote-unquote, met my dad. My dad was obviously instantly attracted to her because he still loved her. And I was instantly attracted to her. I still loved her, too. And she was very similar in her appearance in a certain way, but she looked, you know, different. But she was 13 years younger than my father, and she was just a few years older than I was. But part of that was because as an immortal being, she does not age. So she looks perpetually like she's around 25, 28 years old. It took quite a while to go from laying the groundwork to actually developing this and then working through all the details and the questions that I had, you know, based on my experience. And then having this euphoric, incredibly euphoric feeling of somehow it made sense to me, even though there was nothing in my experience or even in my worldview or anything that suggested that this could even be possible. But I had such an incredible release from it, and it just landed. I was just like, okay. I talked about it to Bob later, and I said I had asked the question of everybody, and Ion was the only one who could really resolve it for me in a certain sense.
So did Ion explain to you why you created that reality? You could have done a lot of different things other than that, but you wanted to make the bridge from that to where you are in the now?
It needed to be resolved. And even though there are immortals who technically don't bear children, my mother's situation was unique because she had a very strong desire that superseded her lack of ability or whatever, or her inclination to not be able to have children. The point being is that it was important for her and I to both resolve this in our worlds because she wants to have a relationship with me, which is unfolding. Point of it is, too, that I wanted to get on and talk about it in relationship to the RNA drops because not only is there this whole experience of what occurred with me, but the reality of it is that just because I had, quote-unquote, knew what happened to my, quote-unquote, mother and our unique situation, it did not instantly resolve the historical considerations that I had built up in my body and in my mind and in the labyrinth and in my identity and all those other aspects that needed to be worked out of me. And that happened with the RNA drops. Having this huge anomaly with my mother and all the things that came from it left a big biological implant in my life in terms of how I reacted and responded to things. Because just because you hear the information and you know, or you have a resolution in a certain sense, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the end because other aspects have to be worked out. So Ion, in my session, went on to set up some of the other things that I had mentioned, which are unfolding, and one of which was how I would actually get reconnected with my mother and what were the circumstances under which she became, quote unquote, immortal. So I'm going to play that clip right now so you can have a reference point to what Ion was speaking about.
But you'll find this younger person that would be just so knowledgeable and so knowing. Nothing ditzy going on here because of all the practical experience through living that your mom has actually gained. But you see, as an immortal, it kind of sucks because you find a great big old bug to sleep with that likes sleeping with you, and the best you're going to get is they turn into an old man and you're still a saint. So the best it gets is downhill from there. Okay. She was born in 1340.
She's born in 1340. What is the process where you become an immortal?
It's a super shift. Revelation 23 will help you with that a little too, Bob.
Okay. So Iron said that I could expect to become aware of a woman who would have the appearance of being younger than I was, but would actually be older than I was, much older, and that woman would be my mother, and she would begin to approach me to develop a relationship. Now, one of the things that Ion said at the end of that clip that's very important is that chapter 23 of the book of the Revelation starts to lay out some of this. And you heard Ion made a reference a little earlier to the DNA and the strata and the separation from non-physical and how that all works. Every living thing has DNA. So there is a application of that that started to be developed in chapter 23. And then through the rewrite session, you can see that because I had this information in my second session, as we were going through rewrite, I was listening from a very dynamic perspective because I was trying to put together the elements of what might have occurred or may currently be occurring with my mother. And then the difference between the aspect of being immortal and eternal and whether or not the RNA drops would actually be a way for my mother to hoik herself up and get out of her immortal state into an eternal state. As I went through and listened to the session, because obviously I listened to it more than once, I heard Ion kind of imply that there were ways that immortal beings could actually ascend. If it was what they wanted to choose to do. Well, I didn't know what they were. Ion said if they hooked themselves up just right in different things, and I didn't know. But then Ion also dropped the little tidbit into my session about how chapter 23 starts to lay out the dynamics about of being immortal. So I started to put a few pieces together through that. And when we got into the rewrite calls, and again, rewrite sessions were developing the major material that was underneath the surface material that's in the Revelation series, and really started to draw out this idea of the RNA drops, I started kind of putting things together and thinking, well, gosh, maybe this is a way that there could be some kind of a new opportunity, a new experience that would be available for her. All those things are kind of unfolding. And then on top of it, again, as I had said, the main thing for me was that even though I got this information and it was all, as Ion had said, we'll lay it out in layers and you'll have to embrace it bit by bit. So that session was 2 years ago and I'm just coming out and talking about it now because it's taken me this amount of time to be able to put it together in a way that makes sense to me. There were things that Ion said in my session about my mother that nobody would have known except me.
Right.
I never talked about it to anybody. You know, the details of what they knew and how they knew it and also circumstances with my father and the timing of the events and also some of my reactions and things that I attempted to do and, you know, all my investigative work because there is no trace of either one of the... You could almost call it an alias or something that this person operates underneath. So anyway, so they knew it all. They laid it all out and went into details that were pretty intense.